million. It represents the first significant investment by a European carrier in a U.S. domestic airline. Lehman Brothers, the nation's largest underwriter of mortgage-backed bonds, posted a decrease in quarterly profit. However, fees for investment banking and equity trading buoyed up its bottom line, beating Wall Street expectations. November wholesale prices soared, the biggest monthly leap in 34 years. Analysts blame gas prices. Inflation was higher than was originally anticipated. Light sweet crude oil trading at $92.25 a barrel, gold at $804 an ounce. Near today's close of Wall Street, the Dow up 46 points at 13,520, NASDAQ down 2 points at 2668, the S&P 500 up 2 at 1488. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Well, good afternoon, America. This is Mark Levine reporting from Washington. Just in the distance, the Capitol Dome is there with the light lit on. When there's the light over the Capitol Dome, it means that Congress is in session. God, I want them to turn that light off. Turn it off! Go home! Go home, Congress! Adjourn, please, God, adjourn! Stop caving into the Republicans. I tell you, I know today's show is supposed to be on the rise of Obama and Huckabee, and it will be. I'll get to them. I watch the Iowa debates. I'll talk about Barack Obama and Mike Huckabee, as Bob likes to call him. And we'll get there. We'll get there. But first, I just got to vent. I mean, the dome is not far from where I live, not far from where I report. And the light is on as the Democrats are caving in one after the other. As we speak, the Democrats are about to sign on to another $70 billion more dollars to fund the war in Iraq. Not because they want to do it, mind you. They consistently vote to bring the troops home. And those votes get filibustered or vetoed. And then the Democrats say, well, you know, we got to give him something because he won't do anything we want. No, you don't. No, you don't. Turn off the light. Go home. Go home, Congress. Go home. Do nothing, Congress. I did a show. You know, I knew this was going to happen. I did a show on Tuesday. Right where I called it, Please Do Nothing, Congress, where I was going to give this particular rant, and then a few Democrats gave me hope. David Obie of Wisconsin gave me hope. He said, why are we giving the Republicans scraps? Let's change the funding. If they won't fund anything we want, fine. No bill. We'll cut from what they want, abstinence-only education and the like. And it looks like they're going to do that. But on Iraq, I want you to know, I went wild. I called, I'm a resident of Virginia, and I called my Virginia Congressman Jim Moran. I called my two Virginia senators. One's a Democrat, one's a Republican. I called Webb, and I called Warner, and I let them all have it. That poor staffer, each of them heard about 30 minutes of my rant. And I'm going to tell you what I said and what they told me. Then I went and I called Nancy Pelosi's office and left a comment on the comment line, which I'm sure will be promptly deleted. But look, the argument is pretty simple. The Republicans refuse to negotiate. They will not cut a deal, period. That is a comment of Tony Fratto, the White House flacky. The White House will not cut a deal, period. Fine. They won't play with us. Take our ball and go home. Let's have an early Christmas break. The most powerful thing Congress can do right now is adjourn. George Bush, you won't negotiate with us? Adjourn. Go home. The sad thing is that voters support what the Democratic Congress wants to do. They do. The reason why their approval rating is so low is not because they don't support the Democratic agenda. Americans, Democrats, independents, heck, increasingly more moderate Republicans support the Democratic agenda. And we'll talk about what that agenda is. It's simple stuff. It's weaning us away from foreign oil. Hello? I mean, Jimmy Carter talked about that in the 1970s. It's the, you know, I got my issues with Jimmy Carter, but he was right about that. It's about cutting off tax breaks to oil companies. You know, I called Senator Warner, my Republican senator of Virginia, who's retiring. We're going to replace him very soon with Mark Warner, a Democrat. I'm sure we're going to win 5 seats in the Senate. But that doesn't mean the Democrats need to back down now. Look, in a year, if we get a Democratic Congress, we increase our majority in the Senate and the House, we get a Democratic president, I don't care who, I don't. I like them all. Not Mike Gravel, but he's crazy. But, you know, if Clinton becomes president, or Edwards, or Obama, heck, if Richardson, or Dodd, or Biden, or Dennis Kucinich becomes president of the United States, with a Democratic Congress, we will get a whole heck of a lot of things done for this country. No question about it. But we've got a year until we get there. Stop compromising, Democrats. Stop it. You're not getting anywhere. This is true whether it's the energy bill or the AMT bill. Let's just go through each one. Let me tell you what's going on in this town, because I've been talking with a lot of people, including some friends of mine, on the Hill. And they're frustrated too. But no one's doing anything about it. On the energy bill, what is that? Well, it does some good things. Okay, that's probably the one I have least complaints about. The energy bill would raise fuel standards for the first time in 30 years. It's a good thing. It would have required that 15% of our utilities come from renewable resources. It would have cut back on huge taxpayer benefits, tax breaks to oil companies that no other company gets. No other company gets. ExxonMobil made more money this quarter than any corporation on Earth. The planet Earth. Beating the record set by ExxonMobil the quarter before. And your taxpayer dollars, when they're not going to fund a ridiculous waste of lives and money in Iraq, are going to fund ExxonMobil, whose CEOs make I don't know how many hundreds of millions. They're taking the money of people who are struggling to hold a job or two or three with or without health care. So today, the Democratic candidates for president that are in the Senate, Senator Clinton, Senator Obama, Senator Biden, Senator Dodd, did the right thing. They flew back from Iowa, even though there was a debate today, cast a vote in Washington this morning, and all flew back to Iowa. And the vote, of course, was not on the bill. It was on the vote to invoke cloture, the vote to stop the Republican filibuster of the bill. And the vote was 59 votes. They missed it by one. Every single Democrat voted for it, with one exception, who I understand, I guess. Mary Landrieu is from Louisiana. That's a big oil state. She's up for re-election in 08. I guess I can barely forgive her. They got 9 Republican votes. I called Senator Warner's staff in Virginia. He is a Republican, to see how I voted. Staffer first didn't know, and then I looked it up, found out how he voted, and got another staffer. And I asked the staffer, why did he vote against the energy bill? Oh, sir, he didn't vote against the energy bill. He voted to invoke cloture. That means I know what it means. I told her, I know what it means. It means that he was filibustering the bill. It means that he was refusing to allow people to have an up or down vote. It means he was thwarting the will of the majority of senators. I said, that's worse than voting no. That's worse than voting no. I said, okay, fine. He was thwarting. Okay, he didn't vote no on the bill. I grant you that. He voted to thwart the will of the majority of senators and the great majority of the American people in trying to wean us off of foreign oil. Why did he do that? I asked. In a little bit more calmer voice than I am now. She said, well, he didn't want all those tax increases. I said, there's only one tax break in the bill, one tax increase in the bill. It's to roll back $13.5 billion that the Republicans gave oil companies every single year when they passed the energy bill, when they were in control. I said to her, ExxonMobil, same thing I told you, is the biggest earning corporation in the world. Why should they get my hard-earned money, what I have left of it? We don't get much on here on the Horn. We don't get anything here on the Horn. Why should they get our tax-earned money? And she didn't have an answer for me. She said, well, you know, a senator doesn't like tax increases. So you're charging us more? She said, you know, I'll put you in touch with our staffer in charge of energy. I got him. I got his voicemail. I ranted. I don't expect him to call me back. That was my call with the Republican. I was much harsher with the Democrat. I gave a call today to Senator Webb, Democrat of Virginia. Very important Democrat, by the way. It was his election that was won so close that, well, they thought it might go to a recount. It was the closest election in November 2006. It is the crucial one that gave us the 51st vote we needed to take over the Senate. And Webb is a good guy. And I said that to her. He's a good guy. He stands up to the president. He's very strong. I like his principles. Heck, I like all the Democratic principles. I like every bill they initially passed. What I don't like is the compromise legislation. I said, why is it that we're always backing down? Why are we always caving in? I thought Webb stood up for the people who voted for him. Is he going to cave in and just do whatever Bush wants again? Is this the reason why I worked for his campaign and donated to his campaign? So he could be a rubber stamp for Bush? She told me of all the good votes that he had made, and they were good votes on the initial drafts of all the Democratic bills. I said, yeah. Yeah, we start off voting right. Then the Republicans refused to negotiate, and we caved. And then she went on about the Republican filibuster and Bush's vetoes. I said, I know all that. I know every bit of that. You're right. The Republicans refused to play ball, and I even get it. I explained to her that I used to work in Congress. I get it. We can't pass a bill without Republican support. I get it. So let's not pass a bill at all. The Republicans refused to say yes. I get it. But we can say no. We can say no. Adjourn Congress and let the government shut down. Now, you know, Elo points out in the chat room, and she's absolutely right, that when they adjourn, we get recess appointments. So fine. So play games. Meet every 3 days pro forma for 2 minutes to prevent them from getting recess appointments. Fine. Do it. That's fine. Let's play those games. I'm okay with that. But stop work. Go home. And announce to the public exactly what you're doing. I talked about this with Congressman Jim Moran's staffer, who thought I had a very creative, edgy idea. I said, it's not creative. It's simple. It's simple. They won't play ball. We go home. What's so creative? What's so edgy about that? She also assured me that the Democrats supported all the priorities that I mentioned, but thought that my tactic was quite creative. Really? Is it that creative? For Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, or heck, bring on Jim Webb, he's a much better spokesman than Harry Reid, to get on TV and to say, look, here's what we tried to do, American people. We tried to wean us off of foreign oil. We tried to end these huge corporate welfare tax breaks for oil companies. We tried to do this carried interest proposal. What does that mean? It means that we think that people that make hundreds of millions of dollars playing with money on Wall Street should pay the same rate of taxes at least as a waitress in a diner or a guy flipping burgers at McDonald's. Because we don't think that the rich should get money from the poor. We don't believe in reverse Robin Hood. And if you want your alternative minimum tax gone, you know, we support that. I'll explain that in a minute if you don't know. I know this is sounding like a rerun of Tuesday show, but I'm angry. And I said to her, and she said, well, I don't know if we could get the TV time. I said, did we ask? I mean, I think that's a story in itself. Nancy Pelosi goes to ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, MSNBC, and the Fox Propaganda Channel. And she says, I want to deliver a major policy speech explaining to the American people why we in Congress are about to adjourn without passing a single spending bill. And I want to know whether you're going to give a coordinate branch of government, a co-equal branch of government. Heck, Congress is Article 1 in the Constitution, my friends. The president is Article 2. I want to know if you're going to give Article 1 branch of Congress. Are you going to let us speak to the American people, or are you going to refuse? Because if you refuse, I will put out a blistering statement that maybe at least the New York Times will cover, talking about the fact that the media is absolutely prejudicial against Congress. And I will say to you, in every single interview I do for the next year, if you want to interview with me, you have to undergo 30 seconds first where I explain how I am angry at the fact that the media refuses to cover a co-equal branch of Congress. Demand the time. If they refuse, that is a front page story. Demand the time. And if they give you the time, explain to the American people why it is the Congress is shutting down. Say, we are trying to do what you want to do. Bush and the Republicans refuse to negotiate. They refuse to give in one iota. So we're going home. And we will come back. Here's the room. It's right here, a congressional building. When President Bush wants to walk in that room and sit down with Harry Reid and me and negotiate face to face, we will come back in session. I'll come back on Christmas Day if I have to. But until the president negotiates with us, well, I'm just afraid the government's just not going to go forward. I don't know what else we can do. It's not our fault. American people, you decide. And I would bet that the congressional rating, which is now at 39%, would go up to 60-something percent. Because the American people support the Democratic priorities. They just don't know how the legislative process works. They don't know what's going on. They don't understand why the Democrats are caving. And what are the Democrats saying? Well, let's see. I got their quote right here. We tried everything to address these issues, Reid said, citing 57 Republican filibuster threats. We lived by PAYGO. That's, you know, paying for everything you spend. Fiscal conservatism, balanced budget, not living by the massive debt of the Republicans. We tried. But they wouldn't let us. They wouldn't let us. They wouldn't play ball with us. I thought Charlie Rangel had it right. Congressman Charlie Rangel said he thinks Democrats suffer from the Stockholm Syndrome. That's the syndrome where you're taken hostage and you start to identify with your captors. Chuck Schumer's giving it to him. He's saying, look, you're digging your own grave, Republicans. I don't think so, because I don't think the American people know what's going on. I mean, here you have the Republican Party saying, we will not allow the government to be funded unless our friends, the oil companies, the richest companies on earth, get $13 billion that you taxpayers are working hard for. And we won't let the government function unless our friends on Wall Street, the people who love to play the market just like some of us love gambling, the people that make hundreds of millions a year playing with other people's money, We don't think that you have to pay the same rate of taxes as a ditch digger. The ditch digger earning $10,000 a year should pay a higher rate than these 100 millionaires. Let them defend that to the American people. The automatic minimum tax, by the way, alternative minimum tax, if you don't know what it is, the AMT, was designed back in the 1970s in order to make sure that very rich people who use loopholes pay at least some tax. And it's generally a good thing. I mean, it is an index, so as time has gone on, it encroaches more and more on people who might be called the upper middle class, those earning more than $100,000 a year. And people in both parties say it should be fixed. The difference is that the Democrats say we should pay for it, not leave the debt for our children. Republicans say, "Wee! Take out the credit card. Heck, we could spend $500 billion on Iraq and it's not funded. Why not this stuff?" So I called Senator John Warner, Republican of Virginia, and I had a very frank conversation with his staffer today. And I said, why is it that Senator Warner is not a fiscal conservative? Does he believe in massive debt? And why does he hate balanced budgets? Because I wanted to give him, you know, put it on Republican terms. Republicans claim they don't believe in big government. They claim they believe in budgets that are balanced. So I said, on this AMT bill, why won't he fund it? And he said, well, Senator Warner, ever since the 1970s, has supported balanced budgets. I said, not in this case. He said, well, he thinks that spending should be cut. I said, which spending? Well, entitlement programs. So you think people should lose Social Security in order that this AMT thing should be fixed rather than the Wall Street managers? Oh, no, I didn't say that. Medicare, you want to cut off Medicare. You want people to die of diseases so that... I didn't say that. You said entitlements. What are you talking about? What are the entitlements? Social Security, Medicare? You want to cut disability funding? Is that what you want to cut? Well, he wouldn't specify. So I said, well, how about this carried interest proposal that only affects a few thousand Americans? They're all earning hundreds of millions a year. It means that they will earn maybe only $500 million a year instead of $700 million a year. And the only difference between $500 million and $700 million is where you put the five and the seven. I don't think it affects living standards very much. I really don't. I don't care what mansion you buy. I mean, maybe you buy, a $50 million mansion. But if that's a tenth of your salary a year, okay, so you can buy 10 such incredibly expensive mansions, and you can't buy 14 this year? I think they'll survive. Oh, well, Senator Warner's looking at the carried interest proposal. He's looking at it, really. Hasn't he come down to any decisions on it? Oh, well, he's not on the Finance Committee, and I see. When does he plan to make a decision? Well, I don't know. Well, why not tie it to the AMT fix? Oh, because the AMT fix was never supposed to affect middle-income people. Of course, to Republicans, people earning over 100 grand or a million middle-income, but okay. I didn't fight him on that. I said, I understand that. I'm not even arguing against the AMT fix. I'm just saying, don't you think he should pay for it? Don't you think we should be a fiscal conservative here? Oh, well, we just felt that it has to be fixed, and so therefore. Don't you care about paying for it? I told him that when ordinary Americans have to buy something, they don't, well, I take it back. Some Americans do buy something and worry about funding it later. They're the ones with high credit card debt that are in big trouble. But prudent Americans figure out how they're going to pay for something first. What happened, I said, to the Republican Party as the party that used to be fiscal conservative? Why is it that only under Bill Clinton in the 1990s we had a surplus? He didn't have any answers for me, but I felt good venting. And I encourage you folks to vent as well. You can call 202-224-3121 or 202-225-3121. Both will get you to the Capitol switchboard. Ask for your senator by name. If you don't know who it is, tell them your state. Ask for your member of Congress by name. If it's a Republican, ask them why they're filibustering. If it's a Democrat, ask them why they're caving in. Because I'll tell you how it's going to work. I already know how it's going to work. The Democrats will try to do the right thing. They will fail because of the Republicans, which is why we still need to vote a lot of Democrats in 08. But then here's the crucial part. The Republicans will say, we won't budge. And then the Democrats will do what the Republicans want. Yeah, we're going to throw another $70 billion at Iraq, folks. $70 billion. You know how much children's health care that could give? And what's going to happen? Well, the Democrats will vote against it, but a few Democrats and all the Republicans will vote for it. Pelosi will vote against it, but she'll allow it to go to the floor. I had to explain to these people that I know the rules. Don't try to trick me. The Democrats can simply refuse to bring it to the floor. Go home. Keep the thing in session a little bit to prevent the recess appointments. Fine, Elo, but go home. If they won't play ball with you, go home. All right. I guess I'm done with my beginning rant. Got a lot more to talk about. I want to talk about the election. Iowa caucus is coming. The rise of Obama and Huckabee. I want to talk about the CIA destroying tapes of torture. And I want to talk about something I heard from Bill O'Reilly. Toll-free number, 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. All of that when we come back.
You're listening to the Head-On Radio Network.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
This is the Head-On Radio Network, The Horn.
Join us this Thursday, midnight Eastern, on Foxed Up, where you'll hear a hot new Christmas anti-war song by one of the most successful artists of our time. But there's one hitch. He doesn't sing his own song. So tune in this Thursday, midnight Eastern, to Foxed Up for all the answers and to hear Christmas in Fallujah. This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
There's a place where a total stranger will give their blood to save your life. There's a place where someone you never knew will save your child from drowning. A place where people will give you food and shelter after a flood. There's a place where, when you need it most, someone will reach out their hand, put it across your shoulder and say, "Everything's going to be okay." That place is called America, where we look out for each other. And it's up to us to keep it that way. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org today.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Why doesn't my party get it? Why don't they get it? No, Bob, it's not because they don't care. That isn't the reason. It isn't. I know these people. They do care. They really do care. They just feel that if they do nothing, and Bush is hitting on them, do nothing, if they do nothing, that they'll be blamed. And I say, explain it to the American people. This is not a do-nothing Congress. This Congress has had more roll call votes in calendar year 2007 than any Congress in American history. They're working hard. They're doing the right thing at first glance, right? They passed the right bills the first time around. Then Bush vetoes them. Then the Republicans filibuster them. And then they have a choice. And this is where I'm angry at them. Not at first blush. The first bills are great, most of them. I'm mad at them at second blush when Bush says, take it or leave it. Do it my way or the highway. And I say, Democrats, take the highway. Take the highway. Bye-bye. Go home. Go home. Have a nice holiday. Enjoy your Christmas. Enjoy Kwanzaa. My Hanukkah miracle's over. That was a Tuesday when I thought the Democrats were actually going to stand up to Bush. Go home! Bush says my way or the highway. Isn't this a great quote by Nancy Pelosi? Bush said my way or the highway. We respectfully choose the highway. If George Bush wants to compromise, he knows my address. He knows my phone number. I'll be waiting for his call. Otherwise, we're just going to wait. Come January, come February, Bush is, oh no, the people will have furloughs. Oh no, our poor people in the military may have to come home from Iraq. How terrible would that be? Huh? Here's a quote from a CNN article. Privately, Democrats say they have little choice but to give the president at least some war funding because Senate Republicans have vowed to block any final budget deal unless it has at least some of the war funding Bush has requested. So block any budget deal. No budget. No budget. None. If you won't play ball, go home. The White House, CNN writes, has also been aggressive about pointing out that Defense Secretary Robert Gates will have to start laying off some civilian employees. Oh, no. You mean Halliburton? And freezing some defense contracts. Oh, no. Poor Lockheed. Unless the Pentagon gets new war money soon, putting vast political pressure on Democrats to give the troops more money before going home for Christmas. Really? Is that what the troops want? More money? Quote, we're calling on Congress to fully fund the troops, unquote. White House Press Secretary Dana Perino said Wednesday, quote, the troops need the money. Secretary Gates has been very clear. Since November 14th, he has said that there might have to be furlough notices that go out if we don't get the money. You mean that if the troops don't get the money, they may have to be withdrawn from an area where their lives are at risk every single day by a people that doesn't want them there? You mean they may have to leave this wonderful land of suicide bombings and civil war between Shia and Sunni to return home to their families where they might have to, I don't know, get a new job where they're not involved in killing people and actually take care of their families? Oh no! Please, please don't abandon the troops! Don't force them to come home to their families when they'd rather be there with the suicide bombers. Please. Please don't touch that tar baby. Please. Okay. I'll try to be calm. Alan the trucker is on the line with me. Alan, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
I was going to ask you a question about yesterday's show, but I don't want to change the subject. You're on a pretty good roll today. I like your show.
Well, thanks.
I was wondering, can we actually go bankrupt? I mean, it's the way they're spending money, $9 trillion, it seems unbelievable. Will the corporations really try to take over the government, or are they doing that, or have they?
Okay, well, there's a lot of questions there wrapped up in what you ask. Let me deal with them one at a time, and if I don't answer them, you'll tell me. First of all, can the country go bankrupt? Well, it kind of depends on what you mean by bankrupt. If you're asking whether, you know, the government can shut down for failure to have spending, which is what basically I'm proposing the Democrats do right now, don't pass the budget bills. The answer is yes. You have to have money to fund the government. You may recall in 95, 96, the government shut down. It never really shuts down completely because usually the President and Congress are willing to provide at least emergency funds, you know, to keep the basics going. The unemergency things, you know, parks and all get closed and libraries and museums and so forth. Usually the stuff that you know, people's Social Security checks keep going out and things like that. And if they don't, then the answer is it's a game of chicken. I admit it. It's a game of chicken. We have to run our car fully at them and see if the Republicans swerve. I get it. And most Democrats are saying, well, you know, we can't close down the government. I think we can. It happened in 95, 96. Again, it's not my preference. I wish the Republicans would negotiate, but they won't. And the American people won't understand that they won't unless we're willing to play a little bit of chicken, unless we're willing to risk political suicide, understanding that the American people are more on our side than the other. So can the government go bankrupt? Well, you know, it can run out of money. That's true. You talk about can corporations take over. Well, they don't. I mean, they're kind of taking over now in the sense that they own several politicians. But no, they technically don't run our government, technically. And we can refuse to give these tax breaks. And I don't know if I've answered your question. Have I?
Oh, it sounded pretty good. You said that if we had some problems in 95 and 96. That was when President Clinton was president.
Right, and the Republican Party, and he couldn't agree. And the American people, at the end of the day, agree with Clinton and not the Republican Congress.
I remember the Republicans back then. They acted like we didn't have enough money for anything when Clinton was president. But it seems like we have a lot of money to borrow now. So it seems like they're
borrowing tremendous amounts of money. We have never seen debt like we're seeing now. I mean, the irony is one of the things that Democrats are supporting is what used to be called fiscal conservatism. Now, because conservatives believe in massive spending, they call it fiscal responsibility. But I support that. I support pay-as-you-go. You know, I mean, there are times in emergency when you need to run a budget deficit. But I guarantee you, if the taxes of the wealthy were raised to pay for the war in Iraq, and we just had a nice little war surtax that said, all right, all of the money to pay for the war in Iraq will be paid from by people, say, earning more than $500,000 a year. And we're going to have to charge you at 60%, but that rate will end as soon as the war in Iraq ends. That war would be over so quick. your head would spin. Those troops would be home so quickly. The American people don't want to pay for this war, including the rich.
Yeah, I heard that their tax cuts, does it come up to about the same amount as the war cost?
Well, it depends. Actually, it's more. But both things take from our budget. Both add to the budget deficit. Both the Bush tax cuts and the cost of the war. They go in the same direction, which is into greater debt. One brings less money in, and the other pours more money out. So I mean, there's a reason why we had a surplus under Bill Clinton. We didn't have the tax cuts, and we didn't have the war. So they both hurt us. But like I said, I would have a tax increase to pay for the war.
No
one's going to vote for that. But see, that's a great amendment. That's a great amendment. If you support look, I would support a tax increase. I'd be happy to pay taxes. Maybe some of you disagree with me. But to fight the war in Afghanistan, to me, that was a war worth fighting. They came, they attacked us, Taliban, Osama bin Laden, fine. That war I supported. And I'd pay for a tax increase to do it. If you support, maybe we should have something where if you support a war, you should pay taxes to support it. I'll pay taxes to support the war in Afghanistan, and all those people that supported the war in Iraq, they'll pay for that too. It happens to be a lot more expensive, a war. I'd love to see that.
That sounds like a patriotic thing to do.
I think so. Again, if you support a war. Hey, thanks for calling. Did you have a quick question about yesterday's show, about the gun show?
The guy called in and said if you do away with poverty, then that'll cut down a lot of crime. And then the guy with the NRA said that during the Great Depression, we didn't have much crime. So I was wondering what your answer to that would be.
Well, I have everything I've seen, and I don't usually study way back to the Great Depression, but everything I've seen shows a strong correlation between poverty and crime. Crime went down under Bill Clinton substantially. Now, there are two possible reasons for it. One is that the poor got richer. The rich got richer under Bill Clinton. The middle class got richer. The poor got richer, too. The other thing is that he put 100,000 more cops on the street. So it's not clear which caused it. I think they both caused it. But everything I've seen has shown that the more poor people are around, the more crime there is. Because, heck, if you're desperate and you need to eat, then people often... there are criminals that are always going to do crime because they're just evil people. And then there are people that commit crime in desperate situations. So the more poverty we have, the more desperate situations we have. I have no doubt about that. Now, as far as the Great Depression, I don't know what crime rates were during the Great Depression. He threw that statistic out. I mean, I assume there's a point where you get so dirt poor that, you know, you can't eat and you're dying and you don't have enough strength to do a crime, maybe. I don't know. I can't speak to that statistic. But I can tell you in general, you will find that when poverty rates increase, crime rates increase, and that's been true at least since the 60s. I just haven't studied the data before then.
I would say in the Great Depression, everybody was in the same boat. That could be one of the reasons.
Yeah, maybe there's no one to steal from. Your neighbors are too poor around you. I don't know, but thanks for your question. Thanks for calling in, Alan.
Thank you. All right, come on.
Well, I know I'm supposed to get to the topic at hand, and so... Let's go there. I did watch both Iowa debates, and I am struck, it is an amazing thing, by the quick rise in the polls, really just this week, of people who were considered second-tier candidates. And I'm talking about Barack Obama. Well, I guess he was never considered second-tier candidate, but prior to this week, it was very much the conventional wisdom that Hillary Clinton was going to run away with the Democratic nomination. And now she's in trouble. Barack Obama has pulled pretty much close to even with her, really well within the standard of the margin of error, not just in Iowa, but now in New Hampshire and even in South Carolina. It's an amazing thing. And on the Republican side, a guy who was clearly a second-tier candidate, not even mentioned when most people talked about the candidates, Mike Huckabee, has risen to a strong first place in Iowa. What is going on here? Why is it that the excitement... it's all in the Obama camp and the Huckabee camp. What does it say about these two men, and what does it say about the two parties they represent? Well, Obama, I think it's clear. Obama represents change. He represents a break with the past. He represents someone who's got very strong Democratic Party values. And again, I'm not knocking anyone else in the race. I think they all do to some extent or another. Like I said, I'd be happy with any of them over any Republican. But I think that Obama represents a future, an idea that, well, the Republicans kind of sullied Clinton and by, I guess, osmosis, Hillary as well as Bill. And he represents change. You see a lot of young people supporting Obama. I think people are genuinely excited, white people, to be able to vote for an African-American candidate that's not considered to be radical, but very much in the mainstream of the Democratic Party. And it's interesting. I think that a lot of his supporters are white. In fact, at the rally with Oprah recently, Bill O'Reilly, and yes, I listened to his show. I almost called in. I'll tell you, he doesn't give his number out. I would have called in. He was saying that, oh, well, Obama and Oprah were raising all these racial issues. No, they weren't. I didn't recall a single racial issue there. I mean, there are racial issues in America. People should not be afraid to talk about race. But the audience was overwhelmingly white, Bill. They wanted Obama because they wanted Obama. And they like Oprah. It has nothing to do with the fact that they're African American or half African American or whatever. Two more things before I get on to Huckabee. I just got to say, because O'Reilly is so... classically, I don't know. I have to admit, I was amazed by how stupid he could be on his own show. A guy called in talking about, you know, whether or not the Democrats would help middle-income people and lower middle-income people like himself. He was a truck driver, like our friend Alan. And O'Reilly said, well, you know, they might help you in the short run, but eventually the economy would go sour and you'd lose your job. Really? I guess O'Reilly hasn't seen the statistics about the Clinton years. Because under Bill Clinton, yes, the rich got richer, and the middle class got richer, and the poor got richer. And under Bush, the rich, the super rich, have gotten richer, the middle class has gotten poorer, and the poor have gotten extremely poor. But here's the thing that O'Reilly did that I thought was the most hilarious, just because it just shows how stupid he can be. He was saying that, you know, there's a 50% tax when you add the capital gains and the income tax. He said you got a 35% income tax and a 15% capital gains, and that's 50%. So a mathematician called in and patiently explained to him that if you paid 35% and you got $65 left from, say, $100, and then you take 15% of the $65, that's only $10. That's only $10. 15% of $65 is $10. Check it out. 35 plus 15 does not equal 50. If you get 10% off and 10% off again, anyone studying for the SAT knows that doesn't take you down to 80. It takes you from 100 to 90 to 81. Check out my math. And yet Bill O'Reilly was insisting. I mean, he was basically saying 2 plus 2 equals 5. And appealing to the moronic listeners he has, people who are too ignorant to understand basic math, into believing him. And that one really made me, I just thought that was hilarious. And the only question in my mind is Bill O'Reilly that much of a moron, which is possible, or does he just depend on the stupidity of his listeners? I know this, if I were his math professor, he would get an F. But let me talk about Huckabee, the other great rise. Because Huckabee says as much about the Republican Party as Obama says about the Democrats. To me, the rise of Obama means that people are idealistic, they're looking for hope, they're looking for change. They're looking for equal opportunity for all. They're looking for diversity. That's true. Peace, prosperity, moderation to some extent, you know, prudent fiscal management, equal opportunity. What does the rise of Huckabee show? Huckabee is a fascinating character because on his face, he seems like a decent person. I mean, he seems like a nice guy. He doesn't look like Darth Cheney, for example, who looks as evil as he is. But what are Huckabee's policies? Well, let's see. For one thing, he doesn't believe in evolution. Doesn't believe in evolution? Yes, he doesn't believe in evolution. Apparently, Darwin was wrong. Apparently, all those drugs that people get resistant to because the bacteria evolves to be resistant to it, they're just dreaming. Those people that are dying from drug-resistant bacteria, they're not really dying. Look, Huckabee, I think we should give you, if you're sick, the original medicine, not the one that's been created to, you know, attack the evolved bacteria, because you don't believe in evolution. And you want to teach that to our children, who already understand so little about science. But it's more than that. Here's a man, Huckabee, who in some moments actually sounds like he cares about the poor. He even talks about people getting health care, though of course his plan doesn't include any of the universal health care of the Democrats. And then you hear about his plan in 1992 to quarantine AIDS patients, to quarantine people, all people, with HIV. Now, this is not 1972. This is not 1982, when there were still some questions about what AIDS does. This is 1992, when every single educated person, and heck, even most non-educated people, knew that you can't get AIDS by kissing someone or by hugging someone or by breathing it in the air. You only get it through sexual contact. And yet he was willing to quarantine all AIDS patients? What's he going to do, stick them on some island somewhere? Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of Americans, millions now, put them on an island? What is your proposal, Mike Huckabee? Throw them in jail? How do you quarantine people who do not pose a public health danger, remove them from their families, from their jobs? How about concentration camps, Mike Huckabee? Might that work for you? He refused recently to apologize for this comment, saying he might have said it a little differently now. But no one in the media had the cojones to ask him, how would you say it differently now, Mike? And yet, he's seen as the nice guy. He's the idealist person for the Republicans. He's the Obama of the Republicans. He's the fresh new face. And he believes in all the standards of the Republican Party, being cruel to those in trouble, making sure that science is rejected, bringing the Republican Party right out into the bright light of the 15th century, where they can practice torture and have everything that Europe had in the 15th century. They can have the Black Death, right, because they have no science to stop disease. They can have a nice little Inquisition where they torture heretics and witches and gay people and, you know, women. And they can have the science of the 15th century, too. That's the thing that makes the Republicans so excited. And they can have their version of Jesus Christ, right? Not the Jesus that helped the poor, not the one of the Gospels, come on. No, the Jesus that likes capital gains tax cuts. You know that Jesus. In the Gospel, according to Steve Forbes, isn't that in your New Testament? Where we can really punish people for having sex. No one should have sex and no one should enjoy sex, especially women. And if they have sex, well, they should be punished, and not to mention gay people. But we should also have neighbors mistrusting and spy on each other. Let's move from the 15th century to the 16th and talk about the Puritans. If we just spy on each other, if we just monitor everyone's phone calls, we'll have a better America. We'll have an America that's as good as East Germany once was, or the Soviet Union, or heck, the people of communist Vietnam or Cambodia, where everyone is spying on everyone else. Where the rich become richer, the poor become poorer, and where everlasting war and massive debt eventually lead to the rapture. Ah, the world of Mike Huckabee. And let me be clear. I want Huckabee to win the nomination. That's no joke. I want Huckabee to win the nomination. Because I firmly believe that there is still an America out there, the great majority of us, Democrats, independents, and even some well-meaning Republicans who will reject that. And he puts the nicest face on it. Huckabee seems like a friendly guy, and heck, he lost 100 pounds, so he's good for the Oprah world. But what does this man believe in? You know, I was talking with some Republicans, and the Republicans I know are all from the don't ever tax me, I'm rich, leave me alone school of Republicans. I don't happen to know any of the burn the witches, kill the women with abortions, and torture the gay people Republicans. They don't talk to me at all. But those are the two wings of the Republican Party, right? The stomp the poor to get rich wing and the stomp the non-believer wing. And people are shocked to learn that, what, 40% of the Republican Party are evangelical Christians who believe in the Inquisition and torture and don't believe in evolution? Well, now we have Mike Huckabee. Now we have Mike Huckabee, and I think we should put the face on the Republican Party. We need to show the Republicans, those who are just out to avoid their tax cuts, who they really are supporting. I hope Huckabee wins the nomination, and I hope he loses all 50 states in the general election. Because I got to tell you something. I think he can be beat. I think it's telling that the excitement of the Republican Party is all for returning to the 15th century, while the excitement for the Democrats is to go to the 21st. And I'm not endorsing Barack Obama, at least not right now. I may vote for him. I got to tell you, I was very impressed with John Edwards in the debates talking about corporate greed. I think he's dead on. And Hillary Clinton may be the strongest candidate against Republicans. I'm not ruling her out. I liked what Chris Dodd had to say. I liked what Joe Biden had to say. And I was very sorry that Dennis Kucinich was not invited to those debates. And I don't get it. They had Alan Keyes on with the Republicans. Talk about a crazy man. And they didn't invite Dennis Kucinich? But to me, any Democrat is better than any Republican running. And the main thing we have to do is get the Democratic Congress to stop acting like a Republican Congress, to get a little nerve, a little bit of backbone. So I'm going to urge everyone to write this number down, 202-225-3121. 202-225-3121. Call Washington. Tell your Democratic member to get some backbone. This is Mark Levine, signing off.
This is the Quality News Network. The European Union just became stronger today with the stroke of a pen. EU leaders signed a historic treaty in Lisbon today that creates a replacement constitution and a new president. Germany, France, and Poland have all pledged to be the first countries to ratify it so new reforms can take place by the year 2009. The European Union will boycott next month's U.S. climate talks unless America budges on its current position at the UN conference in Bali. European delegates want the White House to accept a range of numbers concerning reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. It is a day of reckoning for the world of Major League Baseball, as some of the league's brightest stars are named in the Mitchell Report on illegal steroid use. More than 50 players are identified, including veteran star pitcher Roger Clemens and newly indicted Barry Bonds. The Mitchell Report took 20 months to complete. It was compiled by former Senate Majority Leader George Mitchell. He was hired by Baseball Commissioner Bud Selig. Mitchell recommends that no punishment be given. Selig says he'll deal with each player on a case-by-case basis. A mistrial has been declared in Miami, Florida, in the case of seven defendants charged with attempting to blow up the Sears Tower in Chicago. The jury cleared one defendant, but was unable to reach a verdict on the other six. Prosecutors say they possibly will try the suspects, known as the Liberty City Seven, again next year. Democratic presidential candidates debated for the last time on the same stage before Iowa caucus on January 3rd. Rival candidates called for an end to the Iraq War and for higher taxes on the wealthiest Americans. Russia says contracting disputes with Tehran